It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports. I'm back together for the first time in over a month. And before we get to the Nathan Eovaldi thing, we have to go back to something that Tim McCone just had in your Sports Hub headlines. What's this story with Boston College?
All right, so they were playing Texas A&M in basketball tonight.
Okay.
And apparently they had travel issues yesterday, and so Boston College wouldn't have gotten in until 1 o'clock today for a 5 o'clock game. So they said, screw it, we're not coming. And Texas A&M is not happy with that decision because they think that they could have gone to another airport or they could have gotten in earlier today. And so now a home-and-home that was scheduled, Boston College is probably going to have to pay a $100,000 fine because they're not showing up for this game.
So BC fires coach, obviously, then?
That must, right?
Or commercial, I should say?
Yeah.
Well, A&M has every right to be pissed at BC.
Oh, yeah.
And imagine that, huh? Wow. That school acting like arrogant a-holes. Hmm. We won't acquiesce to you. You have to do what we would like. Wow, I am stunned to hear that. They had from reading this here, Texas A&M, they had asked them to push the game back to 10 o'clock tonight or anytime tomorrow, and A&M rightfully said no because we're not going to kowtow to you, BC.
Well, A&M could have pushed it. I mean, 10 o'clock seems extreme, but A&M could have pushed it back a little bit, no? An hour or two?
Oh, F off. Good for them. Good for A&M for not acquiescing.
No, I mean, from what I've learned about the story so far, I agree with you. I think BC's in the wrong. But really, A&M, you can't push the game back an hour or two when you know the team's flying in same day? Like,
yeah. No, you're coming to our home court. You have to do what we say. And look, BC can't lose enough for me. I can't. That's the only reason I wanted to bring this up is really just to take a moment to rag on BC. Go Boise State in whatever the hell stupid bowl game, the first responders bowl that they're playing in next month. Oh, boy. The balls on that organization as a whole when it comes to their athletic department, please. Nathan Eovaldi has been re-upped. He comes back with the Red Sox. It seemed like there was some heavy interest from the New York Yankees and the Houston Astros, rightfully so. He was overall the best performer in the postseason for the Boston Red Sox. While I still think David Price should have been the World Series MVP, overall, as a whole, I think even the month and a half leading into the postseason, Nathan Eovaldi was their best pitcher. But he gets paid. And you think, much like Maz, that it's an overpay.
I do think it's an overpay. And I think there's a couple ways you can overpay, right? I'm not as upset about the overall package. Like the AAV doesn't bother me as much as the 4 years. I just think for a guy that's had two Tommy Johns, and I read my colleague Alex Spear's story, I get it. I understand.
It was quite a breakdown, yeah.
You know, it was a tremendous breakdown. That's what Alex does. You know, he dispels a lot of things that are sort of common, you know, perception or common, you know, knowledge about stuff in terms of what's really going on. And that's fine. But I just look at him as a pitcher. I mean, last year was the first year in his career where he made more than 20 starts and had an ERA under 4. So if you're saying the trajectory is just up, up, up from here, then that's fine. But I look at the 5-game stretch he had after he made his first 2 starts, where that was, you know, a 5-game stretch leading into September where he had an ERA over 8. And gave up 38 hits in 19 innings. And then he gets to September, and it was still better, but that start he made against the Braves on September the 3rd, he went 3 innings. It was like 86 pitches. It wasn't a great start. And there's also a sort of an old saying in baseball. And this gets wiped out by his tremendous performance in the World Series. But you don't want to make evaluations and decisions based on the way a guy pitches in September, because there's all these September call-ups and all this other stuff. So as far as I can see, this decision is based on two things, Jim. One, the guy was lights out every time he pitched against the Yankees.
Yep.
You know, regular season or postseason. And he was great in the postseason. So that's enough of a sample size for the Red Sox to give him 4 years at basically $17 million a year. But I look at a guy like Eovaldi, and I think they could have sort of not sold high because they weren't going to get anything back for him. But the guy was a rental. He did exactly what you wanted him to do, which was help you win a World Series. And at that point, you kind of get out. Let somebody else overpay him. Let somebody else give him 4 years. And I don't know how you feel, but I just worry that down the line, if you know, 4 years from now, and he's in the last year of that deal, he's making $17 million, and they want to make some other move, like, they have a lot of guys to try and sign here, whether it's Porcello or Sale or Bogarts or Bradley or Betts. And is this somehow going to impede them from signing those guys? Or if they sign some of those guys and they get into a situation where they need to add a piece, we don't still don't know who the closer for this team is going to be.
Right now it's, what, Matt Barnes or Ryan Brazier, right? Yeah. That's what it feels like as of today.
Let's say that doesn't work, and you have to make a deal for an established closer, you know, next year. And you say, well, okay, we got to pick from this bin of guys because we already have spent so much money on our team and we don't want to get into that top-tier luxury tax. So I just think cumulatively these decisions can add up. You know, you look at it, you say, well, it's just, you know, it's just an extra year for Eovaldi and, you know, it's just a little bit more money per year. But if you do that for every guy, then suddenly you're hamstrung.
Yeah, I guess I'm, you know, you can lump me into one of these people that's really never concerned with the finances of the Boston Red Sox. They should be able to do whatever the hell that they want financially.
Sure.
It doesn't mean that they should every single time because, yeah, you know, you end
there
up
is a real budget there, though.
Yeah, and you end up making some financially irresponsible moves like, you know, Ruznik Castillo getting the money that he's getting paid to be a minor league ball player. That slob Pablo Sandoval is still on the books. They're like, they're, you know, they've gotten themselves in real trouble here. But you mentioned his success against the Yankees, and I think that in of itself is the reason that he's come back here in four starts against him as a member of the Red Sox since they brought him in last year.
Yeah.
His earned run average is sub 1.39, held batters to a 367 OPS, and zero home runs, 18 strikeouts, just three walks, given up just one earned run, 11 for 77 against him. He's so good against that lineup. And I understand the concerns about his health, and he's had the two Tommy Johns. That, coupled with the postseason success and his age, he'll be 29, I think, going into next season.
Yeah.
Then, you know, if he's healthy, and I know that's an if considering the two Tommy Johns, well, the ceiling couldn't be higher, and you're getting the guy in the prime of his career. To me, it's a slight overpay. I didn't think it was anything egregious. I mean, Maz said that a guy like this, considering what his record is,
yeah,
the win-loss record in the ERA, he should be getting somewhere around like $9.5 million, maybe $10 million bucks. I thought around 15.
He was going to get more.
Yeah, I thought 15.
3 years, $15 million, I'm
yeah,
good. I'm okay with that, and that's why I said for me it's more about the fourth year. I don't like the fourth year. I would like some sort of out there because I just feel like that's, you know, like, so I hear what you're saying. And again, I know I'm in the minority here with Maz, but you're saying prime of his career or not. Well, if that's the case, if I'm Nathan Eovaldi, then don't I want an out after? How come there's no out for Eovaldi in the deal after 3 years? It seems to me I'm getting the getting while the getting is good, because I know that I could break down at any time here. So yeah, give me that fourth year. I mean, because he'd be 29, 30, 31. You could hit the market again at 31 and cash in. So if these are supposed to be the best years of his career and he's on the uptick and that's how he feels, then wouldn't you want to sign a deal where at least there's an out for you so you can cash in? How come there's no out?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
Maybe he knows he's going to steal that fourth year. That's why, Jim. He's going to steal that fourth year.
I think the interest was real. He would have been a great fit with Houston. I think the Yankees, yeah, you know, they've now missed out on a couple of frontline starters.
Yep. So, although they did bring in Paxton in a trade.
Okay, oh, right. Okay.
James, big Maple, now a Yankee.
But I think it was good to keep him away from New York as well. So, I don't know, a slight overpay to me. I wasn't apoplectic about it at all. I thought it was kind of a win-win type of thing. What else do they need to do?
Well, they got to figure out the closer situation. I'd like to see them sign one of the veteran guys out there, whether it's an Adam Ottavino or, you know, Andrew Miller. I like David Robertson. He might be sort of the compromise there. Who knows what Andrew Miller is going to ask for.
Kimbrell's gone, right? Like, he's same in his age.
It seems like, I mean, if you're spending $17 million on Eovaldi, and just to flip it back to Eovaldi too, you know, I've heard, and one of the things I like about Eovaldi is, like, yeah, you know, well, let's say he's not good as a starter, you can put him in the bullpen. I agree, like, he was great in that role, but if you're going to pay $17 million for a late inning, you know, relief guy, well, why don't you just pay Kimbrel?
Well, he was, I mean, I think you can trust Nathan Eovaldi far more than you could trust Craig Kimbrell.
Over the 162? I mean, this is where I get it. See, to me, this is recency bias. Like, yeah, of course, Kimbrell stunk in the playoffs. And Eovaldi was much, much better. There's no question about it. But like I always say, like, you have to build two teams. There's a team for the 162, and then there's a team in the playoffs. So you get these guys that are playoff heroes. You know, that's fantastic. But you still have to get back to the playoffs and have somebody who can perform over 162. And if you're building a contending team, one thing you can't have and that will undermine it immediately is instability and uncertainty at closer. So they got to figure that out.
Mike in the car on the Nathan Eovaldi signing. Go ahead. You're next here on Gasper and Murray. Hi.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, I like the signing. I think, like you said, maybe overpaid by a couple of million a year. But we play the Yankees how many times during the year, and he just seems to kill the Yankees. And, yeah, you know, maybe emotionally we're going off of the performance in the postseason, but you need that too. I just think it was a good signing.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, I think most people feel that way, and that's, to use your term, recency bias. And that's why, you know, most fans, if not all, look at this and be like, yeah, just considering, you know, what you're coming off of and how this team ended up in the World Series, and he was such a big part of it throughout the postseason. I mean, he was amazing in the ALCS against Houston. Then no one really has an issue with it. But I don't know. Like, when it comes to the finances of the Red Sox, I tend to just be like, bah, they should be able to sign whoever the hell that they want. Left over from the Sports Hub Celtics show, we have Dreds in the car. Wanted to talk about Jaylen Brown. Hello.
Hey, how you doing today, Marley?
Good. What's up?
So I called earlier on your other show that you're on. Obviously, had a pretty bad call yesterday. It's called the worst call ever. But we're not going to get on that. My point is with Jaylen Brown, I definitely think it's essential that he I think he should be playing off the bench, because he brought the tenacity, drove to the rim, got fouled, went to the foul line. You know, enough with him shooting the threes. You know, drive to the rim, you're athletic. Do what you got to do. Do that, you know. And then I think his value is going to get up. And then I think we definitely should probably, he would be the one to go, I think, when it's time for trading. If it's not this season, definitely in the offseason. That's just my opinion on him, you know.
All right, well, thanks for the call, Dreds. Yeah, as of right now, I don't think that the Celtics are going to be looking at trying to trade Jaylen Brown. But, you know, people were hot after that ugly loss to this very Knicks team that they just beat the bag out of on Thursday night a few weeks back. It was either him or Rozier. We got to do something.
Yeah, people
package them together.
People wanted a head. Just wanted a head at that point.
Frankly, I was kind of into it in the way, because, you know, most Celtics fans, again, it's all puppy dogs and rainbows, even when things are going bad for the team. Like, no, you guys don't get it. No, that after that, that was rock bottom. People were rightfully pissed. It was good to see people, the Celtics fans, kind of by and large sound like every other crazed fan in and around the area. Let's go back to this Patriots game, because I think it's a big one coming up tomorrow against the Dolphins. A bad Dolphins team. I find it inexcusable if they go down there and lose in Miami again. But we're going to get the Dolphins' perspective of things from Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. He'll be joining us next here on 98.5.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
You know, looking at the Dolphins, this is a lot different team than we saw 8 weeks ago. You know, gave us a lot of problems down there last year with their scheme, their players, you know, the way they played. I'm sure we'll get the same thing this time. Hopefully we'll be able to do a better job of it.
They play well at home. I think they use that climate as a benefit to them. Us going down there and playing good football is ultimately, that's the opponent, is the Dolphins and not the climate. And playing a good football game is definitely, you know, what this week's about for us. And we can't expect to go out there and play less than our best and win.
Excited to get down there in some warm weather. The climate's going to be definitely a change from what we've been practicing in the last couple weeks. I mean, we've been practicing in mid-30s, 40 degrees. So just got to go down there. We got to execute. We got to make plays. And we got to start fast from the get-go.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, followed by quarterback Tom Brady and tight end Rob Gronkowski, talking up the Dolphins ahead of tomorrow's game in Miami. And while they are pumping up the opponent, someone who actually covers them for the Miami Herald couldn't feel any more different about him. That's Armando Salguero. He joins us here on Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Good afternoon, Armando.
No, the Dolphins are awesome.
Yeah. Well, we talked to you heading into the last time that these two played, week four, and the Patriots ended up blowing them out 38-7. You thought the Dolphins sucked then. Any reason that your perspectives changed since September?
Well, so let's define suck. Okay, because down here, yes, a lot of people are sick and tired of being sick and tired, but they're sick and tired of being sort of mediocre, and not sort of, classically mediocre. You got to understand, this is a franchise that since 1994. Their record is 198 wins and 198 losses. And this year, their record is 6-6. And their head coach, Adam Gase, is 22-22 over his career. So do you understand that although Gase and Mike Tannenbaum and general manager Chris Greer have only been here 3 years, anyone who has lived the Miami Dolphins experience for the last quarter century recognizes that we're on the same path, and it's a path to mediocrity.
And how much are they? It feels like they're going to really miss Xavien Howard in this game. He was just named the defensive player in the AFC of the week from last week's win over Buffalo. 7 interceptions on the year. Had 2 in the Monday night game down there last year. He's going to be a big loss for them.
He's their best defensive player. He's their arguably their biggest playmaker left on the roster. And so, yeah, that hurts. Especially since, as you know, the Patriots, God bless them. You know, I really respect the fact that, and I've seen it several times, and Chris, you've seen it. So the other team loses a starter in game, and most teams just continue to do what they do because they are automatons and they do what they do. The Patriots recognize, hey, the guy that probably came in isn't as good as the guy that went out. Let's pick on him for a while.
Yes.
And we're going to pick on him and then pick on him some more and then some more. And until he proves to us that we shouldn't be picking on him, we're going to pick on him. And so unless I miss my guess, Minka Fitzpatrick, who's going to start at the boundary, he's played most of the year in slot, or Bobby McCain, who's going to start at the other boundary, he's played most of his career in slot, one of those two guys are going to get picked on. And that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, obviously tough with the injuries, Armando, for the Dolphins on the defensive side. What's going on offensively with this passing attack in Ryan Tannehill? Is it just a health situation with Tannehill? Obviously, I know he missed time, but it does not seem like this is a potent passing attack by any means.
No, it's not. And this is all that I need to explain to you about the Ryan Tannehill passing attack. When he missed 5 games because he had a capsule injury in his throwing shoulder, and that was, I guess, October and through early November, the Dolphins' passing attack with Brock Osweiler was more or less the same. Brock Osweiler. The same. And so while Brock is not as athletic, he doesn't have as good an arm, he's way more familiar with the offense because he was under it in Denver. And again, they more or less, it was no perceivable significant difference. Now, that tells you something not about Brock Osweiler, because I think we all know that Brock Osweiler is not an NFL starting quarterback, and the Houston Texans found that out the hard way. I think that tells you something about Ryan Tannehill. And while Tannehill is not a bad player or a bad quarterback, it's pretty rare when he reaches very high highs. And even when he does, it's not for any consistent amount of time.
Armando, you've covered the league for a long time. You're a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. And look, there's been a lot of mediocre Dolphins teams you've had to cover, but the Patriots consistently go down there, like last year, and lose to, you know, Jay Cutler coming off the trash heap and starting that game for him the Monday nighter in December. Why do you think that this team, and arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, go down there and consistently struggle against a mediocre opponent?
Right. Well, if you ask Bill Belichick, it's because the Dolphins are awesome.
Yeah.
but if you rely on truth and the facts, the fact is that the Dolphins have spent much of their, you know, resources and salary cap money and draft pick resources through the years on their front seven, and particularly their, you know, their defensive line and their edge rushers. So when you have that and you have that quality, you can upset the quarterback, or supposedly upset the quarterback. And they've been able to do that against Tom Brady through the years, going all the way back to Jason Taylor, who's a Hall of Famer. They also have the added advantage that when the Patriots come here early in the season, it is very, very, it's like sun hot, surface of the sun hot. And the Patriots, you know, they have an advantage late in the year in Foxborough with the weather because they train in it, they're used to it, they embrace it. Well, the Dolphins have a similar advantage early in the year in South Florida because they do, in fact, train on the surface of the sun. They do, in fact, accustom their bodies to the high humidity, and it's just they're fine, and they don't wilt late in games when other teams are. And then the other thing, and the final thing, is oftentimes in that streak, the Patriots, when they come to South Florida later in the year, they don't always have something significant to play for. They're not always, you know, they're never practically in a division race because the AFC East is the New England Patriots and the Three Stooges. And so they're typically either vying for home field advantage or they're not. And oftentimes they haven't been when they've come to Miami.
I want to ask you about a former Patriot here, Danny Amendola. I know he's on the injury report with a knee. One, I'd say, is there any way he misses this game? And two, how has he performed this year for the Dolphins, especially, I guess it's grading on a curve with the quarterback play, right, Armando?
Right. So he's been solid. He's their leading receiver. Yeah, he's not missing this game. As a matter of fact, he and Adam Gase got into a visible heated discussion during practice earlier this week because Amendola, as you know, has a knee injury. It's an MCL. He's been practicing, but they don't want him to, or they didn't want him to, you know, give it everything he had on a Wednesday practice. They want to save him for Sunday, but there was Amendola on Wednesday running routes and pushing himself like it was game day. And Gase went up to him, and clearly it was, what are you doing? This is Wednesday. It's not Sunday yet. Dial it down. But that's not what Amendola is about, as you know. And so it wasn't a heated thing, but it told you how much Amendola has brought to this team, and it told you how much Adam Gase respects him and really thinks the world of Danny Amendola.
So just one last thing before we let you go, Armando. They are 6-6, like you say, and technically in the hunt for that final wild card spot. But if the Dolphins do collapse, is Adam Gase going to be out, and could Jim Harbaugh replace him? Because I saw Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, wrote this week. He believes the Dolphins would actually be the prime landing spot for Harbaugh.
Yeah, that is. I love Mike, but and I get it. You know, Steve Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, is a big Michigan guy, and he gave $300 million to Michigan, and he doesn't miss any Michigan games. And therefore, I would say to you, he didn't miss the game in which, you know, Jim Harbaugh's team got lit up for 62 points by Ohio State a couple of weeks ago. So I don't think Adam Gase is in trouble. I don't think Steve Ross is going to pull the rug out from under him. Now, they do have, you know, games left. And so if they play the final four and they, as you said, collapse in those four and it's ugly and he loses the locker room, then we're having a different conversation. But given the arc of the season right now, if they continue to follow that arc of the season, they're probably going to end up, we're going to see an 8-8 team. And we're going to see a team that doesn't make a head coaching change.
Armando Salguero covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and you know, we're very envious of the weather, but happy holidays to you and yours, and thanks for joining us here this afternoon.
Thank you, man. Merry Christmas. I'm by the pool right now.
Do it up, Armando. Yeah. Do it right.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Armando. Merry Christmas to you too. Oh man, that's the part I'm envious about. You know, those covering, you know, Zoe and Sosie get to go down and enjoy the weather just a little bit. Obviously, they get to cover the game, but man, what are you looking at? Temperatures are like 25 is the high today. Ugh. Ready to get the hell out of here. I don't know about you.
Yeah, well, you have your trip. Your big trip's coming up, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, Turks and Caicos.
At the yeah, end of the
cannot
there you
wait.
Go.
A beach, there a hammock, go. And a book, and my
a
lady.
Beach, on the a
beach,
a hammock.
That's all I need.
Working internet? Sounds good.
Unlike here with the working internet. Okay, so speaking of which, McCone is going to give you the sports of headlines. He's written them on papyrus because nothing's working here. So you're going to get you caught up with what's going on, how you can catch the Bruins and Celtics tonight here in our sister station. And we'll be back, talk a little bit more about the Pats. And I think the importance of this game is I think it's huge. I think we're going to learn a lot more about this game tomorrow and this team as a whole, more than even the game next week against Pittsburgh. I'll explain why coming up next here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gronk, the force, the monster, the Hall of Famer, the All-Pro. You're going to see it in flashes here and there, especially when he has rest, he's feeling well, maybe the divisional round, maybe the Super Bowl if they get there. Largely, he's going to be an above average, slightly above average tight end. And I think it would really behoove them to go out. They need to bring somebody in because I don't know how much longer he's going to last.
I feel like obviously I can be more effective for sure. I can grow in the pass game, definitely grow in the run game even more at times. And just whatever it is, just got to go out there and play my best football.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, talking about Gronk earlier this week when he was on with Phil Grimes, followed by Rob Gronkowski. He spoke yesterday. Pat's heading down to Miami tomorrow to take on the Dolphins. They're 1-4 there in their last five. You know, they've been flashing some of the numbers that Tom Brady has put up down there here as we have ESPN on the studio, in on the studio. He was, what, 0-11 on third down of the game? The Monday Nighter down there last year in December.
It's the only game of his career without a third down conversion, which I had forgotten about.
I knew he was bad. I forgot that it was that bad. It was a real chuck and duck game. Gronk didn't play in that game because that was the where you get suspended after the whole thing that happened in Buffalo last year. And I just remember him chucking up in double, maybe sometimes triple coverage, especially to Brandon Cooks and Xavier Howard, who's not playing tomorrow, the cornerback of the Dolphins, had two picks in that game. I don't get it. Like, they play down to this team time and time again, even when it's been some of the best Patriots teams, you know, even in the early aughts. And this team this year, I was just talking, as we were just talking to Armando Salguero, who covers them, they are the definition of mediocrity. And this is why, Chris, it's inexcusable, especially as well as they played defensively, at least, in the last few games, and especially coming off this win over the Vikings, which I thought was dominant and their best win of the year. At this point, like, it's inexcusable for this team to go down there and lose to them. I don't care about the bad juju of going down and playing to the Dolphins, or maybe it's too hot and their conditioning's not great. Whatever the hell it is, no excuse. And I think we'll learn a lot about this team and what their makeup is if they're able to go down there and kick the bejesus out of this Dolphins team like they think that they should, because if they don't, well, then they are what I thought that they were heading into this last win of the Vikings, and a bit of a fraud. And that's a bit of a fraud. They can't win on the road, much like that 2009 team. Like, comparatively speaking to other Patriots teams, I don't think this has been one of their greatest collections.
No, I don't.
So,
yeah,
I my perspective changed a bit after that dominant Vikings win, but I'll go right back to that if they go down there tomorrow and lose.
So I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but like developing opinion that I've had while we've done this show is just because of their past issues with the Dolphins. If they do lose that game down there, I don't think it necessarily condemns them to a Super Bowl-less season, you know, just because of what the past issues meant. Like Brady in December down there is brutal. And Phil Perry had some of these numbers, NBC Sports Boston. But, you know, the career passer rating for Brady in December is 92.3, which is really good. In Miami in December, 73.3. Touchdown to interception ratio against the Dolphins in December, 9 touchdowns, 10 picks. Completion percentage, 59%. So you can chalk it up a little bit to that sort of, you know, Larry Bird, Oakland Coliseum thing where it's like, I just don't like this building. I don't like this background. I don't feel comfortable, like whatever it is. So I agree with what you're saying about the fact they should go down there and blow doors, or at the very least get out of there with the win. But if the normal South Florida stumble happens, I don't think that that necessarily condemns them to a Super Bowl this season. I think they could still go the next week and beat Pittsburgh on the road. Like, that's my question to you. They lose this game to Miami, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the road. They look bad. You know, I know what the talk would be all week on Felger and Maz. They can't win on the road. They've been bad on the road. Maz doesn't even want to give them credit for the Chicago win. But then the week after that, they go out and they beat Pittsburgh, which we all agree is a better team than Miami in Pittsburgh. That wouldn't change your mind at all at that point? I mean, would you just... In other words, I guess my point is, you could look at it and say, they always have trouble on the road against Miami. That's a team, for whatever reason, it just, like, doesn't work. Pittsburgh, they kind of own that ass, as you like to say. So does that just balance it out?
Yeah, it would balance it, but leading into it, I would be, like, full-on, 100%, like, in the red, Big Jim Murray. I would give them a, like, 5% chance to go into Pittsburgh and win, because that team, and so this is the thing, this is why I think I would learn more, to me, I learn more if they go down there and stomp this bad Dolphins team that is even lucky to be 500 tomorrow, because they're that bad, and they tried to give it away against Buffalo last week, and the only reason that they won in week one, the 8-hour game against the Tennessee Titans, is because the Titans just wanted to get the hell out of there after being there for most of the day. Like, they should do this. They should clean up against this team tomorrow. The Steelers team, even though, again, they've owned that ass, but they're, you know, they, on paper, they match the Patriots. There's real talent there. You have Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, TJ Ward, Cam Hayward, that fat pervert Ben Roethlisberger. Like, they match you. So if they were to go there and lose, even if they win this week, Chris, like, it's understandable. And I would still like the Pats' chances in the playoffs against Pittsburgh, because, again, that's a good team. I just think it's poorly coached and they're sloppy and stupid. But that they have real talent there. There's a dearth of talent on this Dolphins team. There is no excuse for them to go there and lose that game tomorrow. And if they do, I'll give them no... I would feel way worse about them.
No quarter for the Patriots from Jim Murray.
I would give them, like, no chance at all. Very minimal at best to go into Pittsburgh and you know, right the ship the following week. No,
that's the NFL, though, Jim, right? And I know this is what we do for a living, and it's fun, and we speculate and all this stuff, but that's the NFL. You can go out 1 week and look like, you know...
But
crap
this whole
against
season,
the Dolphins.
This whole season, Chris, outside, and I'm with you. Like that Bears win on the road has looked better, because that Bears team feels like they're going to end up making the playoffs.
I mean, they did get the two. If you want to criticize the offense in that game, like, if you want to say the offense hasn't been great on the road, I'm with you, because that was the two special teams touchdowns. But to just sort of completely devalue that win for them as a road win, I can't buy into that.
But they've mostly been garbage on the road this year, and that would continue that ugly trend if they're to go down there and lose tomorrow. Either way, the kickoff is at 1 o'clock. You can catch it here with Bob Sosi, Scott Zolak on 98.5 Sports Hub. You'll be on the pregame down at Splitsville starting at 10:30.
Yep, 10 a.m.
10 a.m. And I'll be on the postgame with Beadle down there. So come join us.
Oh man! Now, I always want the Patriots to win, people, but just for the entertainment factor, if they lose this game, Jim Murray on the postgame, would be gold. Radio gold.
I'm down there most of the time. You know, I'm usually in for the. About the full fourth quarter, you know, just so I want to make sure I'm in my seat and ready to go for the post game. And let me tell you can usually find me at the bar at Splitsville, MFing the TV and having a beer before the broadcast.
Oh, no, I lived that.
I lived that Pittsburgh game
last year. Oh, yeah, I got the full Jim Murray experience for that game.
Arm biting, yelling at literally nobody, just like into the air. It's
death stares.
Yeah.
Just wants complete silence while he just stews in disappointment at his team.
Yeah, you've been talking, trying to carry on a conversation for 5 minutes. You're like, Jim, like, I hear nothing. It's in one ear and out the other.
No, I know. Yeah, just angry.
All he hears, like that high-pitched whine.
Angry departure from the place of business. Yeah.
Well, that's a real time watching a game with me. A lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, what an experience. You guys should raffle that off for Christmas in the City.
Yeah. Do you want to watch a game with an untamed Wolverine? We'll wrap up the show as we normally do when Chris is here. And we're back together, so 5 questions for Chris Casper. We have nothing to do with sports. All right, that's how we normally wrap up the show each and every week, but we're finally back together. We haven't been able to do this in a while. 5 questions for Chris Casper got nothing to do with sports, so let's get right to it, Chris, shall we?
Let's do it.
If you could take a test to predict whether you would die a premature death, would you? Because there was a study on, today, the show, no, or was watching today, saying that you could take this, like, dumb test, how many times you could walk upstairs. It's essentially just like a little workout you can do to almost predict how long you'll live and whether or not you'll end up suffering from cancer or a heart attack. But if you could just, you know, go to the doctor and they could inject you with something and you could figure out, hey, you'll die at 55. Would you pay to do that?
Yeah, totally.
You would?
I would totally do that.
Oh.
If you know there's like a time limit, like let's say, you know, you take the test. I mean, it would not be good to know, but let's say it's like, I'm going to die in the next 3 years. Imagine like all the things you could do with no repercussions. Like,
but would you though?
Oh yeah.
Like would you actually, would like, the wife let you?
There's people like you'd flip off and not worry about it.
Oh
and,
yeah, that would be fun. Yeah. Because you wouldn't care about the repercussions.
And no one speaks ill of the dead. So
that's true.
Yeah.
But what, then again, too, if you found out it was going to be like 97, do you really want to live that long, too?
Yeah, totally. That would be great, because by 97, they could invent technologies where I could live to 197, so that would be great. I'm all about that. Put me in another body. What's that movie that we're like...
Face Off?
No, not Face Off. I think this one was Ryan Reynolds and... what's the guy's name? He played Muhammad Gam... he played Gandhi. He won an Oscar for it.
Oh.
But Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were in a movie like that. I want to do that. Give me some young guy's body when I'm 97.
Isolate that clip. question number two.
Hey, give me McCone's ball gag. No, just kidding.
There's now a rehab, apparently, for kids who are addicted to Fortnite. Oh, my God, we're stupid people. Which has been linked to heroin. Parents say once you're hooked, it's hard to get unhooked. This is them talking about Fortnite, not heroin.
Oh, my God.
Do you think that gaming could be the next public health crisis, Chris?
Only if you do the gamer's voice with the Doritos.
I'm hooked. I can't stop playing. I've played too much Fortnite. Don't you understand? I'm trying to make this a career, Dad.
Oh, God. No, what this all this signifies is just bad parents. Rip the controller out of their hands and just tell them no. It's not a real addiction, you idiots. Once they're hooked, we can't stop them. Just shut the damn thing off and throw it in the trash.
It's hard, though. I mean, people do get, you know, addicted to technology, and that's the problem with technology, is they can access it without you. I think you can become, you know, as someone who has mild OCD, I think that you can, you know, get into certain routines and stuff and become obsessed with stuff. So I think this is legitimate. It does reflect poorly on our society, but I think it's legit.
You don't understand, Dad. One day I could become the next great player on Boston Uprising.
What? What? You're sleeping outside tonight.
But it's 22.
Good. That's what you deserve. Yay, hole. It's not a real problem, but public health crisis. The hell is wrong with the society? Question number three. Chris, it's that time of year where certain radio stations have defaulted to totally Christmas music or holiday music. God forbid I offend anybody. Mm-hmm. But one song, Baby It's Cold Outside, getting a lot of, it's catching a lot of slack. So much so that some stations, there's one in Cleveland that has banned Baby It's Cold Outside, kowtowing to the outrage enthusiasts on social media.
Yeah.
Has society as a whole become extra sensitive?
Society has definitely become extra sensitive, and I think we're probably too sensitive. But can I be totally honest with you? Before Me Too and Time's Up and all the positives that have come from that movement, I always thought this song was really creepy.
You did anyway. Okay,
yeah.
So you were at the forefront of it.
Yeah, I kind of was. So I thought this was kind of a creepy song to begin with. So I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it's a reflection of us being overly sensitive, which we are as a society. I just think it's one of those things where you go back and listen to this song. This is kind of creepy, isn't it?
I really can't stay, baby. It's cold outside. Don't you want to come into my bedroom? Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a holiday song at all. In fact, it's probably...
Like, it's like I just deflated all your tires.
It's probably the favorite holiday song of those guys that were playing in the Cornhole Championship earlier this week. And, you know, it was a slow sports week. The Celtics hadn't played a game since Saturday. They end up playing Thursday night. Bruins are, you know, coinciding the same night with the Celtics. So there's a stretch there earlier in the week. There's nothing on that I really give a rat's ass about. So Chris texts me out of the blue. He's like, you got to put on this Cornhole Championship
ESPNU.
Thing. ESPNU, which I can actually get on my phone. So I pull that up because you were like, this is the biggest collection of like date rapists you'll ever see in one room in your life. And boy, you couldn't have been more right. Like, wow. Those guys know what roofies are. Like, if you've never watched this thing, it's all these SEC schools, and these kids really aren't athletes. And you see them literally drinking beers while they're competing in the world championship
The best part was the one guy who was competing while you could obviously see the outline of his iPhone in his pocket.
The best. And you just, like, the collection of them is every bad frat stereotype.
Yes.
You look at this thing, and it's like, man, this is the baby it's cold outside group right here. Question number four. Kevin Hart, speaking of like people, you know, and how society's become extra sensitive, Kevin Hart just stepped down as the host of the Oscars. Besides The Story, who do you think would make a good host replacing Kevin Hart for the Oscars.
Ooh, that's a tough gig, Oscars host. I thought Ellen DeGeneres was good. Didn't she do it one year, or was that the Grammys? I don't know.
Yeah, one of those.
I don't know.
Like, isn't Jimmy Kimmel good. The
Everybody
go-to?
Likes her, though. Like, she can offend people, and it doesn't really matter.
Ricky Gervais is who I would want to do it. I think he did it one of those times.
And Steve Carell, I think, would be good.
Ricky Gervais isn't going to pull punches either. You know, he's a Brit. I don't know how much he cares about American culture. He can take shots.
The Golden Globes. Did he piss people off at the Golden Globes?
Yes, that's why I want him to do it.
Okay.
Or Norm Macdonald. Norm Macdonald wouldn't give two Fs. Finally, as we wrap up here, fifth question, Chris.
Yeah.
You've had issues with your computer today.
Yes, McCollum I have.
Had them over there on the same computer I did yesterday, which I wanted to put my fist through. Do you sometimes get upset at yourself with the irrational rage that technology can sometimes bring out?
Yes, and also my wife makes fun of me because I refer to computers as machines. I will say, this machine's not working. She just finds that hysterical for some reason. She feels like I sound like an 80-year-old man because I won't say this laptop.
Damn you, machines.
Damn you, machine. Yeah, it sort of feels like that. But yes, I came very close. This is my work computer. I came very close to chucking this against the wall here in the studio.
There's just such a release you would get from putting your fist through that thing or just smashing it into 1,000 pieces. It's like the scene in Office Space when they take it out on the stupid printer.
Yeah.
The PC load letter. What the F does that mean? Like, there is something about that that is just so cathartic.
It is.
I've ruined, you know, a station that doesn't exist anymore, WFNX. I can tell you, I mean, there's nothing they can do about it now. I destroyed equipment there that didn't work. Like, what are you going to do? Oh, man, it was just such a great cathartic release. And I wish I could have done it yesterday. And I'm not proud of it. Believe me, I felt like a 5-year-old yesterday.
Yeah.
I know it made for good content for the show. It's embarrassing, but I can't help it. It's just one of those irrational things. The machines, Chris.
Yeah.
Nothing pisses me off like the machines.
I'm telling you, yeah. It's sometimes you need to release some anger. I may or may not have at one point thrown a trash can through a wall. So,
oh, my man.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
There's some deep-seated hate in there.
Yeah.
Okay, so always a pleasure. It's good to have you back.
Yeah.
Brian Rubb producing the show today. Check out his work on Boston Sports Journal. Follow him on Twitter. Tim McCone, Marshall Hook on Hub Headlines. Thanks very much, guys. Hopefully the computer won't fail for Joe Murray. Are you in with Joe Murray? Is that who's next? Okay.
What's you want up? A quick plug for Christmas in the City?
Oh, right. Yes. In case you haven't heard yet, Christmas in the City over at the Newberry Comics at the Natick Mall. Felger, Maz is going to be there accepting donations. Check monetary donations. You want to bring by a toy as Christmas in the City supplies Christmas to those that can't. They're just giving a Christmas to kids in areas where they're not able to do so. So if you want to come by from 2:30 to 4:30, I'm going to be joining the guys as well. So come by, cash, checks. Buy a toy, maybe even buy something at Newberry Comics, and then just put it in the box over there and come say hello. So we'll take photos and do all that good stuff. So hopefully see you over there in just a little bit. And Joe Murray has you up next. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I'll talk to you on Monday with Felger and Maz. Bye.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Hey, it's Maz. Are you tired of small inconveniences that always turn into big headaches at home? Well, my friends at Rodenizer Home Services can make small fixes like repairing leaky faucets, adding or replacing electrical outlets and lights, or clearing slow drains that will provide big comfort for your home. And with over 10,000 five-star reviews, Rodenizer's expert technicians are just a call away and ready to fix those inconveniences at your home. Experience the difference with Rodenizer Home Services. Visit Rodenizer.com to schedule today. That's Rodenizer Home Services. Nice people. People, great service since 1928.
The Sports Hub On Demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Tip off every Celtics game all season long with a great-tasting ice-cold Miller Lite, the original light beer. Miller Lite, official partner of the 17-time world champion Boston Celtics. When it's game time, it's Miller time, Celtics fans.